What I wanted most to talk about today is the topic of gratitude. And something that for me was somewhat of an acquired taste in the sense that I didn't come to Buddhist practice wanting to be grateful. I didn't come thinking that gratitude was a very important quality to be developed or to have. But in the course of my spiritual practice, the gratitude is something that rose more and more. It became quite a strong presence for me, a very important part of my life. And perhaps it's for me, maybe for some of you, it's a kind of was or is kind of one of these. There's a wonderful expression that I'm now very familiar with. It's kind of a green eggs and ham experience. Where, you know, no, I don't want it. And no, I don't want it. And then finally, oh, I do like it. And I was a little bit, and thinking about this book that was sent to us. This book is a beautiful little book of quotations called Prayers, Blessings, and Meditations from Around the World. It's called The Bridge of Stars. And it was sent to us as a gift by Paula and Joanna and Vincent Emmonson, who were the two ministers who sold us the church here. And they sent this to us as a gift for what we do here. And they wrote this. Vincent and I want to share this small contribution to your new library. It means so much to us to know that you and your community of Insight Meditation Center of the Mid-Peninsula are dedicated to peace, loving-kindness, and respect for that spark of the highest in each person. It is comforting at times like these when we are hearing so much about the threats of war that the awakened awareness of friends like you and your community and others like us in many, many countries are knowing the parallel universe of exponential love, peace, harmony, forgiveness, transformation. That love is a much greater force than revenge and impatience. Your friends, Joanna and Vincent. And I feel very grateful to the Evansons for their support for us and selling us their church in such a very supportive way. When the Buddha, there's a legend that after the Buddha was enlightened, he spent about 7 weeks just staying in the area where he was enlightened. And he spent supposedly the first 7 days after his enlightenment just enjoying the bliss of being enlightened. And then he spent the next 7 days he got up, I guess he sat there for 6-7 days, he got up and he even stood some paces away from that tree that he under which he got enlightened and stood and spent 7 days standing and looking at that tree as an expression of gratitude for that tree, for sheltering him and supporting him for his enlightenment. And the idea that gratitude is so closely connected in the Buddha's heart to his enlightenment makes a lot of sense to me. That spiritual life and gratitude go very close at hand. That a lot of the wonderful gifts that come in a spiritual practice come often sense that they come as gifts. They come as, you know, not something that we kind of make happen or demand happen. It's not like a commodity. It's not like a spiritual supermarket where you just go down and, you know, order up, you know, what you'd like as fast as you'd like. You know, a fast food meditation center. We could start a franchise. You know, fast meditation, and we could get it really down, really pat and efficient, and people wouldn't have to even come by. You know, we could just drive by, right? And we would be really, really good at what we do, and just, you know, have it all packaged nicely. And it just doesn't work that way. And in fact, it works that way so poorly that if we're impatient for spiritual life to work and to get to it and get something out of it, sometimes that impatience stands in the way. And so often the unfolding of a spiritual life goes very much counter to the way that some people at least, expect life to go in our modern commodity culture. And sometimes you need a lot of time for a spiritual heart to open up and to reveal itself. And so it's, you know, sometimes it's phenomenally inefficient time-wise. And but it has to be. And there's no, because if it wasn't, then it wouldn't work. It's because it's inefficient in the sense that we have to have it, give it enough time that we learn how not to relate to our life and to ourselves as a commodity, as something we can get and acquire and make for ourselves. And for some people, that takes a long time of kind of relaxing, letting go, renouncing, softening, kind of letting go of expectation and wants. Because those can, they can, if they're, you know, they're, in some ways they're appropriate to have, in some ways, as probably most of you know, they get in the way. A lot of wonderful things happen inside of our psyche when we don't do anything. When we give ourselves a lot of time and we don't fill it with our preoccupations, with our concerns. A busy life is a beautiful thing, can be a beautiful thing to have, life that, doing a lot of things. But the danger of doing a lot of things is that it doesn't allow for some inner processing, some inner movement to happen. That can happen only with a space of silence or stillness or just time that we give ourselves, going for long walks, going sitting in meditation, going on retreats, going spending an afternoon sitting at the beach and looking at the ocean. There's some kind of unwinding, some kind of releasing, kind of percolating of things that can happen in that kind of context. Some years ago, I was talking to a professor at Stanford who specialized in psychologists. I think he had he was a psychology professor at Stanford who was commenting on other people who were doing research in lucid dreaming. And the lucid dreaming is the idea that you can stay awake and aware during your dreams and track them and do things. And this is a practice that's taught in Tibetan Buddhism, and certainly a capacity people can develop. And he wasn't very approving of it, this thing, because he felt that it's really important for the psyche to have some place where it's left alone, so it can just kind of move in its own way. And if we were kind of bring our awareness to that also, if you have too much awareness, start manipulating that also, the poor psyche, you know, it's like, leave me alone. Sometimes the psyche wants to be an introvert and left alone. So I don't know if that theory, you know, how good it is, that theory, but the idea, at least my idea, is that a spiritual life unfolds, part of it can unfold when we give ourselves time. And then things unfold on their own, and it feels a little bit like a gift. It's not your doing, it's not your making. You make the conditions, you kind of create the conditions for something, and then something can happen. And often you don't know what to expect ahead of time, or you don't see what's coming. I'm in awe in my own practice. If I look back over the years of my practice, how often what I appreciated about what was happening to me initially was very different when I reviewed what had happened 5, 10 years later. Oh, something else was really going on. When I was doing Zen practice in my early years, I thought I was cultivating wisdom, in a sense, and freedom, liberation. And probably one of the most important things happening in my early Zen practice was I was being compassionate. Compassion was kind of being born and being evoked and arising within me. So, you know, what is it that's really happening? Sometimes it isn't so obvious, even in the moment that it's happening. There are unseen ways in which the inner life matures and develops. And it can feel like a gift. And in fact, the attitude of gratitude is phenomenally helpful in a spiritual life. It's phenomenally helpful in doing meditation practice. And that's one of the reasons why I felt this was a really good topic to talk about today, is that in that we're all, most of us are meditators and interested in using meditation as a way of developing our inner life, that bringing an attitude of gratitude to inner meditation will actually kind of, for many people, accelerate that the maturation can happen, that can happen in meditation. However, we have to be very careful that in looking for that acceleration, we're not having a kind of commodity attitude towards our meditation. You know, I'm going to go get what I can here. Sometimes I distinguish between two different modes of relating to our life. And one mode is um, the utilitarian mode. I don't know if these are good words, but utilitarian mode is to do that which is helpful, useful, to get what we want in life. There's many things to get. So, like if you want to go shopping for your groceries, you want to think about the most utilitarian way to do that. Usually, you go down, the quickest way to get to the store and whatever, and at home. But there's another mode besides the utilitarian, and that's the appreciative mode. And too often, we spend a lot of our time in the utilitarian mode, where we're looking, how can I manipulate, work with life? How can I make it work better? How can I make it more efficient? How can I get what I want? And not enough time in the appreciative mode. Rather just appreciating what's here, rather than using it for our own purposes. How can I simply appreciate what's here? Appreciation and gratitude go very closely together. In Latin, the word grace or gratitude in source has in the Latin root the meaning of both thankfulness and also being pleasant, something that is pleasant, something that arises delight within us. The idea of something that brings pleases us is also something we feel grateful for. So I looked in this book under the topic of thanksgiving, under gratitude, and there's a whole section on thanksgivings. And here is a Iroquois song from the last from 2 centuries ago. We return thanks to our mother, the earth, which sustains us. We return thanks to the rivers and streams which supply us with water. We return thanks to all herbs which furnish medicines for the cure of our diseases. We return thanks to the corn and to her sisters, the beans and the squashes, which give us life. We return thanks to the bushes and trees, which provide us with fruit. We return thanks to the wind, which moving the air has banished diseases. We return thanks to the moon and the stars, which have given us their light when the sun has gone. We return thanks to our grandfather, Hino, who has protected us from witches and reptiles. We return thanks to the sun that he has looked upon the earth with a beneficent eye. We return thanks to the Great Spirit in whom is embodied all goodness and who directs all things for the good of his children. That was really beautiful, the idea of this all-pervasive gratitude. We return gratitude. We offer gratitude to all the different forces that sustain us in our lives. When traditionally in Buddhism, in monastic Buddhism, where there's a lot of rituals and chanting that's part of life, part of monastic life, the meals are always done with an expression of gratitude. In Zen Center, they had a little one that I kind of liked. Innumerable labors brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. Receiving this offering, we should consider whether our virtue and practice deserve it. Desiring the natural order of mind, we should be free from greed, hate, and delusion. The work of many beings, how does it go? You all know your own grace. You've heard grace before. And the idea of expressing grace is something we do at home, not so much for my sake, though it should be for my sake, but I like it. I like very much the idea that my son is doing that, and that we do it in the environment of my son, that he kind of grows up with the idea that there can be gratitude for the forces of our life that support and nourish us, and we give thanks for... he actually does it now. He just insists on doing it. And sometimes if there's a guest staying at our house, he asks the guest to do it. So I'm curious, I'm not asking you at the moment, but I just find myself at the moment curious how you're reacting to this theme of gratitude. And some of you probably like the theme, and some of you maybe are skeptical about it. I know, watching my own life, my own mind, I'm struck by how easy it is to lose touch with a sense of gratitude to the world around me. And it doesn't take much reflection, however, to realize how much what sustains my life is a gift. I know that, you know, if something goes wrong with my telephone and the telephone people don't come to repair it, you know, the next day, or that, you know, and then they're late, you know, by an hour or something, and you know, I can feel kind of irritated and annoyed. You know, how, you know, they should come when they say they're going to come, and you know, and you expect things to work, you know, and things aren't working, and then you go to a country like India, and you ask them to come and fix the telephone, or get a telephone, and they put you on a 9-month waiting list, and then you're lucky to get it after 9 months, and you know, you expect Caltrans to come on time, and then you go to India and train on time. You know, you know, and you feel really grateful that it comes. So I'm struck sometimes in my how easy it is for me sometimes to not be, you know, grateful for the tremendous abundance, of tremendous, you know, gifts, the tremendous things that sustain and run my life, the luxuries that I have in my life. Caltrans is a luxury, you know, and all these things. And I just take it for granted, not worse than for granted. It's like, oh, if it doesn't come exactly on time, it's like, oh, what's wrong here? And, you know, 99.999999999999% of what sustains your life is none of your doing. You know, and we're kind of caught up in that little 0.00000000001%, where we think we're in control and can do things. It just blows, you know, it just blows me away. You know, how much has to work for us to get, you know, I mean, our body, all this. I mean, if we had to kind of regulate the chemistry in our body by ourselves, you'd never get up in the morning. You'd be, you know, you'd be so busy. You know, so much works, you know, and the fact that we have this tremendous, you know, economic system here in this country with, you know, transportation and communication between people and internet, and so much happens so smoothly and so easily as it does. You know, why don't we just kind of like, why aren't we always kind of like bowing down, you know, when you see the mail deliverer coming, I'm like, wait, let me bow down to you. There was a monk in India, so a legendary monk, named, I think his name was Ever Weeping, but I don't think he was weeping because of being sad. But he was chastised a lot and beat up by people, it says, because anybody he encountered, he would bow to them, no matter who it was. He's always bowing to people, and people would think, what's going on here with this guy? You know, you know, he's always bowing. They kind of, you know, treated him badly, and but the idea of, you know, why aren't we more grateful? I think gratitude is not an emotion. So it's not something, you know, it's like, you know, it's connected to emotionality at times. But gratitude comes from a particular way in which we reflect or understand our life. The word for gratitude in Pali, as I'm not sure the exact pronunciation, but is katanyu. And it means, the meaning of it is something like to be aware of what it comes to us. So this idea of being aware, the kind of reflective awareness to know. And I've read, and I don't know if this is a true etymological connection, that the word think and thank in English are closely connected. That's what's been argued. And the idea to think certain ways, to reflect in a certain way about our life, is what gives birth to gratitude. And sometimes things happen so dramatically on top of it to us that we just feel so grateful. You know, because it kind of forces a new reflection for ourselves. You know, if you have some amazing life-threatening illness. A friend of mine had it, and he was basically told he was going to die. But then he had a surgery, and they didn't think it was going to work, and it worked. But then for a while he had to have this bag on his side. What's it called? These bags where you poop into. Yeah, and that's not necessarily a comfortable thing to have going around with. But he was, you know, going on with that for a while. And not only did his cancer was taken care of, but then eventually they were able to disconnect that bag and connect up his intestines. And he felt, you know, in such awe and gratitude for his life. And it was really great to be around him, you know, the first few weeks. And now it's been 3 years or 4 years or something, and now I see him, I don't get any hit from him at all. There's a story of a blind beggar who was standing on a street corner with a tin can. And maybe he had a sign that says, you know, blind, please, you know, anything you can share is appreciated. And some man walked by and saw that wasn't really getting much money. He asked, you know, how's it going? And the blind man said, oh, I'm not really receiving much. It's pretty dismal here today. And so the fellow said to the blind man, oh, give me your plaque there and I'll write something on it. And so he took the plaque and he wrote something on the backside, turned it around, and so the backside was, the new writing was facing out. And then he left. And he came back at the end of the day and asked the blind person, how's it going now? Oh, it's great. And my tin is filling up really great. By the way, what did you write? What I wrote was, today is a beautiful spring day, and I'm blind. So that, you know, suddenly people are feeling very different about, let's go by that. And how often do you really stop so dramatically and appreciate what you have, the gift you have, and the fact that you can see. I got these expensive, these are my old glasses. I got these new glasses recently because my eyes are beginning to go more. And then I got these new glasses, and you know, if those of you know glasses, I got progressive glasses because, you know, sometimes I read like this now. So I got these progressive glasses, and I don't like them. You know, they don't quite work because there are various reasons they don't quite work as well. But they say you have to get, it takes 4 weeks to get used to them. They didn't tell me that. But because of kind of dealing with these glass things, I'm feeling so appreciative these days of how much I can see, and that even that I can see at all. I just like, wow, you know, I can imagine not being able to see as good as I do now. I believe, you know, I kind of suspect, my theory is that the American kind of philosophy of individualism, the popular kind of way in which it distorts the soul, the psyche, lends itself to a kind of inability to really be grateful in some deep, pervasive way. Because it's all about me and mine and what I'm going to get and my freedom, my ability to pursue my desires. And any kind of preoccupation with desires. You know that greed and misery are closely connected? With the word, you know, miser. But also that's what the First Noble Truths are, right? That's what it says. But I step back. I was talking to someone today about what one of the ways I've been changed by my spiritual practice, my Buddhist practice. And one way I can talk about the change is by talking about foreground and background of the mind. And the foreground of the mind, in a sense, is kind of what the mind is concerned about. It's thinking about wanting, what it's focusing on. And before I practiced, I had no idea there was a background to the mind. So the mind was basically what was concerned about. And the background, there's this background place in the mind of equanimity, of calm, of spaciousness, of ease, of expansive kind of feeling. And practice has showed me that background part of the mind. And so I find myself sometimes negotiating back and forth between this foreground and background. And it isn't, and the idea is to hold them both. You know, I find that I'm happiest, life works easiest, when there's a sense of working with the foreground, the things of the world, in the context of a background of great kind of ease or spaciousness or calm or equanimity. And I believe that things like gratitude, the reflections that bring up gratitude, the way we think about the world and remind ourselves of how wonderful, are the gifts that we receive in this life. How these are, they kind of feed and sustain that background ability. And to kind of go into the world with this background support of gratitude, of appreciation of this life. To be in the appreciative mode of life rather than the utilitarian mode. The utilitarian mode is more like power mode often. The appreciative mode is more the mode of nurturing, supporting, sustaining. Take the time to actually reflect about the gifts of our life. There's a tremendous amount of them. And it's, like I said, 99.999999, etc. part of our life is really a gift that supports us. And why don't we appreciate it more? In meditation practice, having that sense of appreciation and gratitude as built into the meditation itself, into the attitude we bring to it, maybe at the beginning of the sitting or whatever, actually makes meditation a lot easier, I believe, because the unfolding in meditation is to a great degree kind of a gift. In the sense that a lot of the deepening in meditation comes from letting go of control. Letting go of our attempts to be in a utilitarian mode. There is a place for applying ourselves and working in meditation, and there's equally a place of learning to let go of control and surrendering, yielding, allowing something else to happen. Plunging in to our experience in meditation recklessly. Plunging in with abandon. Abandoning ourselves. And some of the deepest states of concentration that can arise in meditation require a kind of of abandonment, a kind of a letting go, a kind of surrendering, certainly of a lot of the ways in which we try to control things. And some people actually practice a meditation practice of just all they do in the practice is letting go of control. Any time they're trying to do something in meditation, they let go of that attempt to do something. And so that means also you let go of all the instructions you've ever been given in meditation. As soon as you try to, I'm going to follow my breath, that's a doing, let go of that. And it can be really disconcerting for someone to give up all they're doing in meditation. But if it's done carefully, the doing of non-doing can really clear away all the extra activity of the mind and let the mind, the heart settle very, very deeply and enter into very deep states of stillness. So there's a reciprocal relationship between gratitude and stillness, the deepening of meditation, spiritual life and gratitude. That as my sense, my experience has been as the deeper the spiritual life goes, the more gratitude there is. Gratitude in all kinds of ways. The reflections brings gratitude about life. It brings gratitude towards the Dharma, to the meditation practice. Gratitude towards ourselves, for ourselves. Gratitude towards our teachers. Gratitude towards our community. Gratitude towards all kinds of places. The deepening of the practice brings gratitude. And gratitude deepens the practice, which is great. So that's my thoughts for today. So now it's your turn. Yes?
I was just to the spent today getting ready for a presentation on Friday on all the research on mind-body medicine. And clearly the healthiest thing you can do for your heart, for your immune system, is appreciation. Appreciation and kindness, and the worst thing you can do is hostility and cynicism. It literally tears your blood vessels apart. So
literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
So appreciation.
It's good for your health. And appreciation today keeps the doctor away. Thank you. Yes.
I'm not sure that our culture lacks lots of gratitude. I feel it expressed in different ways. But one of the things I really relate to is the story of the monk who went around about it. And I find that people are uncomfortable often when you express gratitude. And they say, oh, don't worry about it. Oh, don't think about it. Oh. And first of all, I'm not sure that they believe that. I think they like the expression of gratitude. But there seems to be something in our culture that if you express gratitude, people seem uncomfortable with it. And I don't really understand that. But I see it a lot.
That's interesting. Other people have that experience or have a sense that our culture, there's a discomfort with expressions of gratitude?
Dismiss it.
Mm-hmm. What else about it?
Receive it.
Sorry?
It's hard to receive.
Hard to receive.
Many people find it's hard to give, to express gratitude. Mm-hmm. Even though they know they feel gratitude, but they don't want to say anything.
In Norwegian culture, you say thanks all the time for anything and everything. If in doubt, you say thanks. you say thanks for last time, thanks for now, thanks for the food, thanks for, you're always saying thanks. But I think it's very interesting what David just said. So if anybody else wants to follow through up on that. Yes.
Yeah, I think some of it too was just general shyness. I have a friend that I brought to the center here to listen to what Nisker's presentation the other night, which was fabulous. And it was only his second time at the center, and he didn't think he could ever even sit for meditation. He reads a lot of spiritual books, but to get him to sit down is a lot. He brought this little laughing Buddha for me with a beautiful note as just a lovely gesture. And when he handed it, I noticed he was kind of turning his eyes down. It's almost like there's an embarrassment of opening up your heart, and I think especially with men. And it was just a beautiful thing, and I emailed him and told him how much that meant to me. So I think some of it is just general shyness about opening up.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I wanted to mention, sometimes gratitude seems to be conditional, on things. If they turn out, you're grateful, and if they don't. And what I've been working on over the years is to have this sense of unconditional gratitude. Because so many times things that appear negative at one time frame turns out the best thing that could have happened to you. In my own case, years ago, 1989, I developed a pinched nerve in my wrist, and I had to go to all these specialists at Stanford, and it pretty much put an end to my surgical career, and I was only 39 years old at the time. But it just opened up so much more of a richer life for me in the area of arts and reading, music and yoga and meditation that I haven't really looked back. So now when something that appears negative, I just kind of take a sort of a breath and say, well, we'll see. You never know what's going to be.
So can gratitude be such a powerful attitude that it's kind of there in the background holding whatever, the successes and failures, the problems and difficulties and the beauty. So you kind of just, there's something, there's a larger gratitude for... Jim.
Yeah. I've recently had an experience that I think supported what you said about the notion of independence. When I broke my leg, it became very apparent to me just how vulnerable and dependent I am. You know, particularly at that time, I couldn't even get up off the ground or, you know, get into a warm place. And I found the sense of gratitude became very strong. That I realized, I mean, as I really allowed myself to see just how dependent, how vulnerable a human being is, that gratitude really did become much stronger. It was much easier to just allow and express. And I found that people seemed to receive it quite well. You know, maybe it was, you know, I don't know why, but it's been a really interesting experience to really have that physical vulnerability express itself so dramatically.
Thank you. Yes?
I've had a number of different managers that I've worked with, like, and the last one I'm really very grateful for. But two things he said when he took over the job. He said, I'm here to see the new people who know what you're doing have what you need to do it. And so there's kind of an appreciation there. But then every time he would write a memo, he'd say, you know, I'd like you to do this and this and this. At the end of every memo was, thank you. And it made such a difference. It just was an entirely different feeling to a command. I mean, he could enforce it, but thank you.
Sometimes, like, even I'm impatient, I think to myself, there's nowhere I'd rather be. And it's a real stretch, but it always changes my attitude.
I think developing a habit of appreciation and gratitude helps one to look for the positive things in life. It's so easy sometimes to go on the negative things. And from that, just seeing what is positive and what brings you happiness in life. So, you know, life is rich with these things. Sometimes go unnoticed if we keep focusing on the negative.
I think what strikes me most about gratitude is how the experience of it feels so heart melting. You know, any hardness or tightness or coldness just melts away. It feels like very heart opening. And when I'm really in a state of gratitude, my heart goes wide open. And I think that can take some getting used to. It's definitely very sweet. It feels like I'm a place where I feel most receptive or aware of spirit in general. So that would seem very intricately connected.
So learning how to be safe, feel safe, or feel be secure when we're very open is part of the art of spiritual life, I think. I'll end with this quote from this wonderful book that the Evanson sent us. Giving thanks for the moment is the only way to glimpse eternity. So I offer you my deep thanks and gratitude, which is very big, huge, to all of you and for being here tonight and also being part of our community here. And I'll see you in a few weeks. Thank you.